I'd like to reconvene the May 22nd, 2018 meeting of the Marine Resources Commission. Reflect the quorum has returned. Next item on the agenda is Harry L. Bowen, Jr., Oyster Planting Ground, application 2016-038. Mr. Badger, good day, sir.
Good morning. Or afternoon,
excuse me. Can I ask you a question? There's three of these. Are we taking those separately?
I was going to suggest that we combine them, and I think I can get a unanimous vote on that.
Well, as long as we can and it's appropriate, that's fine.
And actually, I've talked to Mr. Bowen, and he would be agreed to.
Okay, thank you.
Harry L. Bowen has applied for three oyster ground leases, 16-038 for 30 acres, 16-276 for 20 acres, and 17.063 for 10 acres in Iconic Creek. And this is in the of Northampton County. And there is submerged aquatic vegetation in the area. Location of the applications are right here at the mouth of Iconic Creek. It's about 6 miles or so from town of Exmoor. Water depths vary from about mean low water to minus 4 feet. There is a mix of sand bottom with primarily widgeon grass and eelgrass offshore. And there is mostly cage aquaculture in the area. And there is some, clam aquaculture in this area. All three applications, Boeing 16038, 17063, and the other one is 2016-276. The two applications adjoin each other. This is a 2017 composite showing the Baylor Grind offshore, which these two are adjacent to, mean low water on the south, and on the 16276 application, it abuts the Walker, J.C. Walker Brothers lease on the north and mean low water on the south. Okay, and this is a 2017 map showing in yellow the existing SAV in these areas. As you can see, the SAV coverage is almost completely in all three applications. This is deeper water. Off here is the channel, which I'm sure Mr. Bowen would not want. Mr. Bowen has 83.17 acres on six leases, five on the bayside and one on the seaside. He has seven applications. Three of them are in front of you today for approximately 131 acres. And out of his seven, one is protested, and five have SAV issues. And he intends to grow aquaculture clams, and which require placing nets over the bottom. This is a composite, again, of 2013 to 2017 SAV. As you look here, pretty much all of the applications are included with SAV on them. VIMS's SAV map showed that the proposed lease area mostly covered in SAV, widgeon, and eelgrass in 2017, and the density level was between 40 and 70%. The density level in the past 5 years has varied from less than 10% in some areas to above 70% coverage in others. In the past 10 years, only 2012 and 2011, the density levels fell below 10%. Mr. Bowen was made aware of the SAV issues before he applied, and that staff would not be able to support his applications. He believes there are small areas within the VIMS maps, SAV maps, areas that have not been, that do not support SAV within the last 5 years and should be leasable. What's coming up next is a year-by-year coverage of the two areas. This is 2017, and you can see the outline of the lease, or the two applications here, 2016 coverage. 2015 coverage. 2014 coverage. And then I went back before the die-off in 2011 and 12, and this is 2010 coverage of SAV in the area. That's on the two leases on the west side, two applications on the west side of the small Johnson's Cove. Again, now this is on the east side of Johnson's Cove. That's 2017. 2016, you can see most of it's up here at that point. And this is 2015. It's pretty much all covered. And this is 2014. Again, heavy coverage up here and coverage all the way down. And finally, one showing 2010 prior to the die-off.
Hank, what's the difference in water depth between what's applied for and the J.C. Walker Brothers?
This J.C. Walker Brothers application went right up against the SAV at the time, so it's probably three feet or better at the inside.
Thank you.
As you can see, the SAV has moved in on top of portions of the Walker Brothers. And this is, again, I'm just leaving this up here. This is the SAV 2013 to 2017 coverage map showing each year. And you can see it's pretty much outside of this little area right here, which is offshore, and it's probably too deep. Again, this is offshore and probably too deep. There's the ends of the piers, the channels out here. There's very little that's inside of his application that does not have SAV on it. And our summary and recommendation, BMRC's new SAV guideline, a guidance policy that was adopted by the commission last August at their meeting, stated that new structures or leasing of oyster grounds should be avoided on any SAV beds annually mapped by VIMS during at least one of the previous 5 years. Also, potential areas of SAV restoration shall include all those areas of SAV identified annually mapped by VIMS during at least one of the last 10 years. The density levels in the past 5 years have varied from less than 10% in some areas to more than 70% in others. The SAV coverage in 2017 alone shows coverage between 40 and 70%. The planting of shellfish in these areas would directly impact the widgeon grass and eelgrass present and would inhibit any SAV restoration in the area. VIMS's SAV maps indicate that there has been submerged aquatic vegetation in the area that Mr. Bowen has applied for at least the last 10 years, and that the area is recovering from a low point in 2011 and 12. Given the SAV coverage in 2017 and the likelihood of adverse impacts to these grasses, staff is unable to support the applicant's request to lease all three applications totaling approximately 60 acres of oyster planting ground in this area. And we're recommending denial of 16-038, denial of 16-276, and denial of 17-063. I'm here to answer any questions, and Mr. Bowen is also here.
Questions here or questions from Mr. Badger, members of the commission? I'm sorry, Mr. Zetrin?
That existing lease up there, was that shaped up there based on the fact that that we have SAV?
That's correct. Yeah, we stopped it at the time because of the SAV that was insured.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? Thank you, Hank. Mr. Bowen? Would you raise your right hand?
Yes.
Solemnly swear the best testimony you'll give be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God.
Yes,
okay, state your name for the record, please.
Bowen Jr.
Proceed.
Area.
Sir.
I was really interested more in the ground, I guess, when you do the application. I mean, like I say, there's areas here that have historically had minimal amount of stuff on there. And I guess when you do the map coverage with the colors, they the same thing on this one is along the shoreline. On almost every one of them, there's still area here it doesn't have chlorine. Obviously, at that point, that's 90% clear. Obviously, more than 90% clear. There, those are really areas I was interested in. At least none of that. That's kind of why I was going for these areas. So, just give you an overview. I've been in business for myself for about 12 years, but I've been in the aquaculture business for over 30. I've just built a hatchery in Willis Wharf. Spent about $150,000 to build it and everything inside of it. And like I say, my first year's production this year in that hatchery, and right now we have over 200 million clams leaving our hatchery. Of course, one of our biggest problems is lack of ground for us to grow out. And I picked this site mainly because of the depth, and it's protected from storms. There's no way northwest anything can approach us in these areas. I've also applied for this location because there are no landowner conflicts, no docks in the area, no protests of any kind. And like I say, I said that I like the least areas that have the minimal SAV on them. I think the conversation on SAV needs to be reopened in regards to aquaculture growth. Widgeon grass does provide habitat for a short time, but it also has its drawbacks because it turns into a black anaerobic mess when it dies and re-releases its carbon. It is also very inconsistent with its growth. As you can see, some years it's dense, other years, like say in 2011, there was nothing there. So, of course, clam culture, on the other hand, provides habitat 12 months out of the year, and with both plant and animal species reaping the benefit. Yesterday, I just cut 1 square foot of clam netting, and on that 1 square foot of clam netting had 3 different kinds of vegetative growth on it. And not only that, it had I picked out over 100 copepods, little teeny crustaceans, in 1 square foot of clam net. There were also 6 grass shrimp, 2 mud crabs, 2 periwinkles, and a hermit crab, all in 1 square foot of clam netting. And of course, in addition to that, you have to add the clams, which are constantly clean in the water. And I would say the average middle net clam weighs about 1.8 ounces live, or 1.25 ounces with just the shell. And just the carbon removed from the environment from the clam production is permanent because it's locked into the shell. It's all in the calcium carbonate. And at that weight, over 3,000 pounds of calcium carbonate, of which carbon has a periodic weight of 12, oxygen 13, and calcium 40, which converts to about 14% of carbon. So in doing that calculation, it means about 420 pounds of carbon are removed from the bay for every bed of clams harvested. Or if I could get an acre of ground in there, 8,400 pounds of carbon removed per acre. And that's not counting the meat consumed, that's just what's in the shell. Of course, as I said, the dying widgeon grass releases its carbon when it dies in the fall and contributes to an unhealthy anaerobic environment. So not only does clam culture enhance the environment, it also creates an economic impact for Northampton County, which it desperately needs. We've lost our 2 biggest employers, Bayshore Concrete Products and the hospital. And I have to say the big players in the clam business have been in the business for over 100 years. And their leases have been, they've acquired leases over generations. It's almost impossible for any new clam aquaculture to grow under the new SAV guidelines. I'd ask Hank, Mr. Badger, to try to find, 10 acres anywhere from Iconic Creek down to Plantation Creek. There's not a 10-acre spot anywhere that doesn't have some kind of conflict with it. The SAV bids can also be destroyed by beach replenishment, like Cape Charles Beach. Cape Charles Beach used to be full of eelgrass. Well, they replenished the beach, killed all that eelgrass. But, I'm trying to just ask for, a place that's 90% open with only 10% SAV on it, that I can produce a product that enhances the environment.
All right.
So I really think the percentage needs to change. I'm not sure what that percentage would be. The only other solution I have is that the leased ground that isn't being used needs to be turned back into the lease program so it can be used. There's, I think I counted over 30, I think it was 34 leaseholders in Nassauwatch Creek and Hungers Creek with no production on them at all. And so this ground, it could be available for clam production, and it's just sitting there being used, you know, not used at all. So I think that's one of the other solutions, you know, without having to get into the SAV issues. So anyway, that's about all I have.
Thank you. Any questions of Mr. Bowen? Ms. Everett, thank you.
I don't know if this is necessarily for Mr. Bowen, but maybe it's for Mr. Badger, but has staff looked at the spots that you just pointed to with your cursor, Mr. Bowen, about potentially just leasing those areas? Or I don't know, sorry. Whoever, maybe both, if that's okay with Mr. Commissioner.
You're going to the application, you're going, okay, what would you like? And, okay, well, when you first look at the DMRC map, it doesn't show the densities that the BIMS map shows. So when you go, okay, I apply for that, and then you go and look, okay, it's got grass on it, but this part doesn't have grass, and that part doesn't have grass. So I would have modified my application greatly if I had said, okay, this area and that area to minimize, okay, instead of the entire application having average of 7%, my application could have had an average of 5%.
Hank, what's your?
I don't know how much to add to it, except what we do now is we go on the BIMS maps and we look at the coverage and we'll look at the actual individual maps too, the photos. But we go by BIMS coverage now. We don't call BIMS up on a application by application. We would overwhelm them, and we used to do that, but we tried to get away from it with these maps. And so now we take their maps, and if we got a serious problem, we do call Dr. Worth and ask for his comments, and that's one reason he's here today.
Well, I think the question Ms. Everett had basically was what all of the potential issues, not just the SAV, but proximity to other leaseholders, work that could be done that may interfere in conflict or whatever. I mean, is there any of those issues out there that would preclude a modification of this application to allow him? I mean, that's basically what you're doing, is you're dropping a lease right in the middle of SAV. So I want to hear from my experts what the problem would be, if there is any problem with doing that.
I think I would leave that to Dr. Orth.
Dr. Orth? I think I may know the answer, but I'd really like to rely on the experts.
I think the important thing is Hank's already presented a number of images over the course of the year, and obviously, you know, 2011, that was the year following the big heat dieback. So it's difficult to say, okay, here's a year that things changed dramatically, which it did. So that's why I think, you know, the positive aspect of BMRC now having access to all of our data, which we make available, and we've also now included in our data all the lease information, both applications and current leases, you can follow the pattern of these grasses, because they do change dramatically sometimes from year to year, or in the case of what we've been seeing, they've been coming back in the last few years. And it's a mixture of eelgrass and widget grass in these areas. So you can see that, you know, the one spot that Mr. Bowen pointed to, perhaps in 2017 it was sparse in there, but in the previous years it was dense. I'm sure if we map it this year, it'll be dense again. That area in the other lease, you can see there's probably a series of sandbars, so that, you know, when we, of course, map, we don't take out every single bare sand area. So, you know, this area here, you know, I'm sure that, you know, this is probably, you know, an area that is sparse, that if the commission wanted to lease it, you know, that's your choice. But when we map, we just map the whole outline, because the way the coverages are based, it's kind of a scale that we use of what's called a tree crown cover. So it's kind of difficult to just cut out a small area. So it's all part of what is a 70 to 100% cover. So if you went back, you'd see that sometimes some of this would be, you know, sparse and dense. You want to just run through the other one. So there is, you know, here, if you just keep your eye on this little sandbar here, so that's the same thing. You know, and I think what we've done, we've worked with you in other leases in the past when there are parts of the area that just don't have SAV that, you know, I think they have been leased. Is that correct?
Yes.
So, you know, look at that and that. You know, if you want to cut out these small areas, that's the possibility that you could do that.
Yeah. You have a follow-up? You good?
No, that's great. Thank you.
And that's the beauty of having these sequential photos. You can see that there are some distinct areas that are encompassed in the overall polygon, but yeah. They may not have SAV because of the nature of that particular feature.
Bob, this may be a question for a different day with more time, but are we getting to the point where it just seems to me where we're going to hit a break point where a conscious decision is going to have to be made pertaining to the aquaculture industry and the encroachment of SAV into leases as to where is the point where we say, of course, knowing SAV is very important, but where do we get to the point where enough is enough, where there can be some coexistence of both in an ecological system where we've done good stewardship on both sides of the program?
That's the challenge that we face. And as we've talked about, we've been on this committee for several years trying to deal with that. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I don't think we're at that end point yet. And I think some of these probably will have to be involved in subsequent discussions and keep that committee going.
Well, I look forward to that because
it just
seems to me that, you know, having a hard and fast arbitrary, and I don't mean that in the wrong way, rule where it's like going to be this way, and once this gets to this point, it precludes something else from occurring, is in certain, maybe even legal terms, arbitrary. And I want to make sure as I sit up here and as we sit up here, we do the best job we can from a stewardship perspective to ensure the continuance of the aquaculture industry in good stewardship with our environment. And I've heard in the last 3 months a number of cases where I'm conflicted. I won't say that the last one didn't bother me from the SAV perspective, quite honestly, as much as it did from other user conflicts. I'm not going back to another case. I just think that we're getting to the point where there's got to be some really, not that it hadn't been thoughtful consideration, but we've got to come up with something that otherwise the continued success of our SAV could be to the detriment of a very, very viable industry that we have that provides so much good. So that's my sermon of the mountain today, but I've been holding that back for about 3 months, and that's really concerning to me.
Well, VIM stands, you know, ready to work with VMRC to address these challenges, as we have always. And so if it's the willingness of the commission to move in that direction, we will. And so as Mark brought up earlier, there are some issues that we probably need to address through basic research. I think there are opportunities, there are challenges. That's just how I feel. And certainly, we've done our very best to try to work with VMRC and the aquaculture industry.
And I'm, for gosh sakes, I'm not saying not.
And Mr. Bowen brought up some other interesting issues about leases that are not being used properly. So is it something
that's ours.
So there are other things that are part of that problem, too. And, you know, there are areas that are set aside for public use that may not be appropriate that could perhaps be changed. I mean, these are all tied together very much.
Let's keep that on the front burner, for goodness sakes.
And we're willing to work with you at any point, at any time, to move this along, because we know the challenges are there. We've seen it. We've been here, you know, more frequently over time because...
I mean, really a lot lately.
Oh, I know. So. Well, I like you guys, but not that much to be here all the time. But, yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah, but, Bob, I remember, honestly, I can remember going back, you know, been here since 92. I can remember, you know, the seagrass issue when you're out there working your butt off to get this small area going. That's something that's been a dedicated effort. It's been very, very good for the environment. I just want to make sure that we keep things in the appropriate focus as far as right, wrong, or indifferent.
And Dr. Lukenbach and I talk about this all the time, and we recognize that in order for us to move forward, we're going to have to work with you and the industry to resolve these conflicts.
All right, sir. Questions? Yeah, go ahead. Ted, did you have?
Mine was more a procedural question for staff.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Seeing as we have the applicant that accepts these denser coverage areas are not really something he's looking to do, and we have some areas that are agreeable to the applicant as well as VIMS, what should be the process to kind of parcel out those areas.
Right.
To get them
we started. Would have to serve.
We'll put Hank to work.
Yeah.
More so.
No. We'd have to survey it because we came in recommending denial of all of this. If the commission wants to carve out anything, we'd have to survey it. It's going to get protested because these people were not notified because this was prior to the notification. They'll see stakes go up, and they're going to call me and go, what the heck? I know who lives there. They're going to call. And as a matter of fact, I've got to meet with them tomorrow morning on another project right there. So I know they're going to – it'll be back in front of you.
So, but he's applied for that section, correct?
He has applied for all of it.
Yeah. Why can't we? We have routinely segmented out areas and said we would approve this section of the lease at this commission without re-surveying.
It's never been surveyed. It's never been staked.
Okay.
It has to be staked up and surveyed, and then there's another 30-day protest period. Someone could come in and protest it.
Okay.
And it's Walkley Johnson who lives in this area, I believe. And I think I would be very surprised if we don't get a protest.
I'd leave.
Maybe not.
I don't have any issues with either.
Okay. Okay.
Question for Mr. Bowen. Would you like to proceed in that manner by segmenting out these areas that have very sparse coverage?
Yes. And I would also like to just reiterate about, you know, the advantages of the clam aquaculture ecosystem. I mean, it's totally different from the grass, but it is actually has a larger variety of animals and vegetation than just you know, widgeon grass. So, I mean, barnacles, crabs, I mean, there's just a multitude of the critters that come along with clam aquaculture.
Preach on. We'll take more and more and more.
So I think, you know, people. I brought a piece of net with me, but I wanted to bring it in to show everybody that, you know, the different varieties of vegetation that are on that do grow on the clam beds.
Yes.
Regarding this particular issue, I suggest that we be very careful about the comparisons that are being put forth regarding seagrass and macroalgae and netting. It's a very complicated topic. It's not straightforward. There are values to both, but I think you might be comparing apples and oranges. So I said, just be a little careful. Now, the one thing with regard to the way we provide the maps, it does offer an opportunity to look at areas on a day-by-day annual basis that identifies areas that, within the way we map, areas that may not have SAV at all. So it does open the opportunity of addressing the issues as they come forward. So, again, I think with this new technology that we've been making available to VMRC, they can proceed from year to year and see how these beds change over time, which we're seeing because of some of the issues that we have. So, again, opportunities are there for the challenges that Mr. Owen has laid for.
I got a question for you. How does, like, the boat traffic to those areas? We carved out those little areas there. And I don't know the depth of the water around there, but
it's shallow.
So that's shallow?
Yeah.
So how would the boat traffic, if you went by boat to get to these small parcels, affect the rest of that grass?
If the props are up, very little.
You can't move if the props are up, aren't it?
Well, you'd have to walk it. And they do some of that. I mean, you see people walking through these areas. Or they come in at high tide and wait for the tide to drop. I mean, Mr. Bowen would probably know better than me about how, or Mr. Ballard, where they work in these shallow water areas, how they approach that.
Mr. France.
Yeah, I know that, like everybody said, every month we get issues with SAV. Mm-hmm. But could you remind us just how far we are along and how far we are from the total coverage of SAV that our goal is?
Well, it depends on which area of the bay you're looking at. Bay-wide coverage has increased substantially. So this past year, 2017, we exceeded 100,000 acres. That's bay-wide coverage. What we're producing right now are segment-by-segment maps that will show you how much SAV has been there from 1984 through 2016 in relation to that restoration target. So this particular Chesapeake Bay segment, and we can make this available to all of you as we wrap up that project, you'll have a whole set of maps what we call fact sheets for every single segment of the bay and how that segment is approaching its potential restoration target. So that there we're in the final stages of producing. We've already done this for this particular segment, which segments are based on the Chesapeake Bay program analysis, so they break into like Chesapeake Bay mesohaline, polyhaline areas. So we're on the road to having these that would tell you for every single bay segment, and there's 108 of them, or close to 108 segments, so it's throughout the bay. So we'll have those pretty much wrapped up sometime this summer. Every segment has a restoration target. There's the bay-wide target. There's a target for different segments of the bay, and those are the ones that we're talking about. So this one would be very specific to this particular segment, which is the lower eastern shore bayside.
Ms. Sipper.
First of all, I love those segments, Mr. Orth. But going back to the question a few moments ago of the property next to, I guess, Mr. Johnston's, in front of Mr. Johnston's.
I believe that's his property.
Okay. It would have been staked, just a larger staked area, and he would have been notified?
No. At the time, we weren't required to notify the adjacent Highland property owners when Mr. Bowen's application was submitted. If he had submitted it today, he would have been notified. However, in the old system, once we staked it up and the flags went up, that's the 30-day protest period.
Notification changed. Okay,
notification
that's right.
At that
okay.
point. If the commission decides to lease some of this, and I don't have a heartburn, it's up to y'all, I want somebody to tell me where to start it and where to stop it. Because you can see there's pockets. You know, there's grass here, there's grass here, there's a little spot here, there's grass in here. Spots, you know, do I do this little spot there and do another little spot? It's going to be difficult. I may have to have four different little spots to not get into SAV. So somebody tell me how to survey it without putting the SAV in it. And maybe I could get Vims to give me four corners somewhere. Maybe that would be the more appropriate way. Left up to me, I'm going to end up including because I'll probably start down here, come out in a square, down like that. Now, I will include SAV. It's no way I cannot. But it's up to the commission to come up with that.
Mr. Bowen, did you have any thoughts?
No. Let's see if I can go back to it. One of those pictures. You say you're talking about having SAV contained in that, and I think that's if I cover that with plan bids, which are side by side by side, you get environmental enhancement 12 months out of the year. Where here, you don't know if you're going to get it for 1 year or not, and the grass is only there for June, July, August, and starts to die off. So I think the environmental benefit to a sparse area of grass covered with plan bids far outweighs the grass that could be there intermittently from year to year and from month to month.
Continue.
Procedurally, is anyone opposed to this application? Any other public comments at all on this application? Seeing none, it's before the commission for discussion.
What I'm hearing here is we really can't vote on this today, is that he's got to go stake it out first and then allow for public comment or protest, and then it can come back before us, and then we can vote on it. That's what I heard. Is that right?
You could approve a section today, but I'll have to stake it, and if it gets protested, it would come back to you. If it's not protested, it would go forward.
When you stake it, you go notify the landowners?
No, because it was prior to that. Unless you all ask me to, then I would. It will get protested if we notify the adjacent property owners. Sure.
severed?
That's a closed hearing.
That's fine. I mean, he says he's right. It's my opinion that they get protested. It may not.
So one potential option is to have Mr. Badger defer to VIMS to do that boundary. We kind of relegate that authority to VIMS to decide what that boundary is.
Do you want to put that in the form of a motion?
I'm
just here to write.
You know, VIMS can advise, in all due respect, VIMS can advise. They cannot delineate. They have no codified authority to delineate.
If I do it, I'm going to include SAV. Excuse me. It's no way I can't. Unless I do circles.
Discussion. What troubles me is that I asked a question, why wasn't that lease when the other leaseholder took that up there? And that was because, I guess, their staff told them, well, you got SAV there, so you can't get that. So they came up with that lease that's up there that you see. And now for us to come back and carve out a couple holes, I don't think it's right. I don't think it's right for us to apply one set of rules to one leaseholder and then another for the guy that's doing the application here. I think it's inconsistent.
I can say as an industry member that we are aware that our environments are constantly changing and that it's our responsibility to keep an eye on areas we might want to lease or be active in and to apply for them. And we have this debate constantly among ourselves of, well, I went to apply for that 10 years ago, and they told me I couldn't have it. Well, kind of a lot's changed in 10 years, and it's your responsibility to reapply. Otherwise, we'd have waiting lists with folks from 1972 that once applied for ground and were told they couldn't have it. So that portion doesn't bother me as much. I do agree with Mr. Badger that drawing a polygon here is going to be somewhat difficult. I also don't have a sense of scale of what could actually be done in that area, whether we're talking about 50 nets or 10 nets. But it does look like a significant amount of clams could be grown there. I would be in favor of a motion for Mr. Badger, Mr. Bowen, to consult with VIMS and determine an area that is leasable here, recognizing that there might be a portion of SAV that gets included for the sake of surveying ease, but the spirit of it is to allow activity in the area that is not covered with dense SAV coverage.
You intend to make that motion? If you, I'll take the chair.
So made.
Okay.
Second.
Motion made and second. All in favor of the motion signify, or further discussion at this juncture. Mr. Pankard?
Yes, I hear what you're saying. At the same time, I look at our August 22nd, 2017 meeting, in which we came up with the new structures or lease for leasing of planting oyster grounds, and says SAV should be avoided. I'm having a hard time looking at that and figuring out how we're really going to avoid SAV.
Mr. France?
Yeah, also, we're getting opening up a can of worms maybe here where we're going to go all over the place for every little square inch open bottom. And it's kind of like micromanaging every little piece of it. I don't know if we want to be into that or not.
Okay, motion made and second. Further discussion?
Could you repeat the motion?
Please, Mr. Ballard.
For staff to work with the applicant to approve a leased area that is not covered with SAV in consultation with VIMS, recognizing that there may be some areas of SAV that are leased, but the spirit is to lease the not densely covered areas.
All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
No.
No.
Noes, raise your hand. One, two, three, four. One, two, three. Tub, is it tie? One, two.
I'm an aye.
You're not? I'm sorry?
I'm a yes. I support it.
Okay. All right. I needed another sheet. Let's see. Mr. France?
No.
Mr. Tankard?
No.
Mr. Zedrin?
No.
Dr. Neal?
No.
Mr. Ballard?
Aye.
Aye.
Minor votes aye.
Aye.
Lust votes aye.
Aye.
I'm going to vote aye on this, and I'm going to do it basically from an experimental perspective with the hope that a composite report comes back. I want to let the record reflect that I am not overly enamored with the idea, but at the same time, I'd like to take a look at it.